Welcome to Saha Says, where we go over the headlines of the week, sharing our in-the-weeds opinions. Joining us tonight on the program is Pinky, the team captain for UTSA's CCDC team. We have Cooper, who is a biohacker, news curator at large, and also an ardent supporter and participant of the Dangerous Minds podcast. Myself, I'm Sciatic Nerd, the B-Sides SATX coordinator and podcast manager, and thankfully joining us tonight to add some counterpoint to all of our same thought process, maybe, is Cursor, a software dev with a master's specializing in radio frequency technology. So, thank you so much for joining us this evening, Cursor. Appreciate you staying up late to hang out with us.
Thank you. It's exciting to be on.
Excellent. And before we get rolling here, we do want to thank our sponsor, Axion VPN, who delivers a quality solution for your private connection needs. For more information about their offerings, check out axionvpn.com. And if you or your organization is interested in sponsoring the efforts of Saha or Saha Says, feel free to reach out to us on Twitter using the hashtag SATXHackers. Now, before transitioning into our new sponsor, Dangerous Things, who delivers custom gadgetry for the discerning hacker and biohacker, we really would appreciate it if you would check them out at dangerousthings.com. We really appreciate you taking the time to look into these things with us because we appreciate your input, and thanks so much for listening and participating. So, I've always had kind of a thing about food. I am slightly pretentious about food. I count myself among those who might be called foodies. And really, my wonderful figure, shows this. But it turns out that in the more recent years, folks have decided that food just takes too much time and effort. And nothing demonstrates this more properly than a product that's come up off Kickstarter called Soylent. And everyone was really excited about it when it first came out, but it turns out that not everyone might be as thrilled about it. Isn't that true, Pinky?
Yes, it is. I mean, I'm also kind of disappointed. I'm a big Linux fan, and Soylent's pretty much the open source of food. You can make your own if you so desire. They give you recipes. You can tinker with it, or you could just be lazy and go buy it. So I was excited. I heard some good things from a few friends of mine, unlike Coop over here, who kept taunting me every time I was about to. But anyway, I decided to try it. I bit the bullet. I ordered it, and it's not that cheap to order. But I did, and I made FreeBSD go down this horrible path with me, and sadly, it was a mistake.
Why? What about this was a mistake?
One, everyone says it has a neutral taste. It tastes either like dirty oatmeal or raw pancake batter. We can't decide which one.
Dirty oatmeal. How? Oatmeal really has a very neutral flavor that begins with nothing and ends with bleh. So how can you take that? Like, is this like dirty socks wrung out into the oatmeal?
It's like literal dirt that you put in the oatmeal when you forgot your cinnamon or some shit and you were too drunk last night.
Oh my gosh.
My cinnamon's empty here. Oh yeah, as I just got a correction, it's oatmeal made with muddy water.
Oatmeal made with muddy water.
Well, that's 100% accurate. And the downside is that you hear, because it's supposed to be neutral, it's easy to make your own flavoring with it to help try to cover it up.
Oh.
You try with, like, a lot of people said, just use some cocoa powder mix into it, right?
Oh.
Did not help.
Oh.
The only thing that helps is if you get liquid flavorings, like, you know, the stuff you put in Starbucks and shit like that.
Or perhaps some flavored alcohol that's whiskey flavored. Would that
somehow? I didn't think about that. I should have tried that.
No, that's not a good idea. I'm kidding.
It is totally kidding. A great idea. Try that after this.
Oh, no. This is my
fault.
Don't
do it.
I will.
Step away from the zone.
Okay,
but
so
we all know I'm banned from the kitchen, okay? So it's not like I actually could.
Nice. Yeah, you're banned from the kitchen. But that's okay, because Soylent means you're not supposed to have to spend time in the kitchen, right? So what was the story?
So it actually is somewhat easy to make. It's like any other protein shake meal replacement that you have. Ideally, pick up one of those blender bottles or use your mixer. Their BS about it only takes 30 seconds to mix is BS. Make it more like 2 minutes. But the main problem, like Coop keeps taunting me in the chat, is that, no, you do not throw up. Screw you there, Coop. Instead, you do have other stomach-related issues. And this didn't impact me so much, but it really hit FreeBSD really bad, where he almost did throw up.
Oh, really?
He could not stand for like 5-10 minutes after we ate it.
What, you mean like some kind of stomach spasm or something?
Something like that. It got him so nauseated where Like, you could even hit the couch accidentally.
Oh, my gosh.
Without concerns. And then, you know, your normal amount of time later, you did not have a fun time in the bathroom after that.
Well, right. But between time of consumption and being a human Play-Doh fun factory, I'm curious about his – if what is the basis of Soylent? Is it maybe this highlights an issue if you are not able to process certain kinds of food very well?
I don't think so, because the only thing he has problems with is lactose, and it had no lactose in it. I mean, it's just water in that powder. And
what's the powder made of? It's dried milk. It's people.
It
everybody
might be made of soy, hence Soylent, though they are ripping it off from the movie.
Yeah Soylent Green.
Green variety. Does he not like old people?
So
no, we actually enjoy eating our fellow humans. It's okay.
No. Look, okay, so I want to ask Cursor, because Cursor, you're coming to us from the UK, if I'm not mistaken, right?
That's true.
Okay, so I know that there are these awesome, digestives, right? Are those somehow, like, do you think a solid form, if you just took Soylent dry and made a dry block of it and then just started cutting slices, you'd wind up with McVitie's? What do you think about, what are digestives for, and why bother making them like cookies if they're digestives? What is that? Why are those needed?
So this is an interesting thing, because cookies, firstly, is it a cookie or is it a biscuit? You've got to go with that. We don't really have many cookies. And then the whole thing with digestives, they're made for tea. We like tea over here. So you dunk your tea with a digestive. You cannot eat them on their own. They're disgusting on their own.
But then why cover them in chocolate? I mean, doesn't that suggest that you're going to eat them right out of the package?
They're covered in chocolate because you can't eat them right out of the package.
Oh. Is it kind of the same thing that desks can be made out of, but it's been actually packaged in a chewable form?
It is, but it's not as bad as we have these things called rice cakes. You guys must have them. They are literally like cardboard. I don't know anyone that enjoys them, and if they say they are, they're lying to you.
Well, rice cakes over here kind of taste like styrofoam, not really cardboard, because they're fluffy and tasteless. But they're not that bad if you put, you know, some peanut butter on it. All you taste is the peanut butter, but still it's like styrofoam-covered peanut butter.
I was under the impression that peanut butter is not well made it around the world so much. I mean, do you even have peanut butter, Cursor?
We do, but I've never seen peanut butter and jelly together, and apparently this is a major phenomenon over there.
Sacrilegious.
I hate peanut butter and jelly.
Really? I actually saw people cosplaying this recently, so I mean, it must be popular.
How about peanut butter and fluff?
Oh, no. Cursor, if you're not aware, and I promise we're going to talk about security at some point, listeners. Thank you for sticking with us through the foodie moment here, or the foodgasm, or whatever you want to call it. I apologize to your ears. The fluff, if you're not familiar with it, is marshmallow fluff. So if you like the taste of marshmallow, but wish you had something that was more spreadable and more, somehow more like an adhesive and less like a food product. Because I'm fairly certain you could use this to actually, like, replace sinew between bone, and it would basically stick. Because this will stick to anything. Your face, your hands, your food. It probably stays within your body for at least a century. I don't know. I've just never been a fan of this stuff, and the idea of putting that on peanut butter, which is already so dry usually that you need something to make it more palatable, which is the reason for the jelly, in my opinion. That's just my opinion, however. I don't know. Coop, are you a fluff fan? I don't mean to offend.
No, I got introduced to fluff when I was working up in New England area. Uh-huh. I don't understand why people eat that. It's just solid sugar in a semi-solid form. But you spoke of adhesive. I thought that was what Soylent was, when you just add a little bit of water. Because, you know, the best thing you can do with Soylent, I think, is fix holes in your wall.
You know, it doesn't work that well
that
for
paste.
It doesn't. I tried, okay? It just stays as a liquid mess. It doesn't do anything useful other than make people sick. So maybe I should mix some tomorrow for Halloween and just trick everyone rather than treat them.
Oh, that's horrible. Like, actually make like
bait.
The bait. Soylent shots. This is the question. Was FreeBSD consuming the Soylent so quickly, maybe, that it made him ill? Because I heard one podcast reviewer describe it as being, again, the flavor neutral question notwithstanding, the idea that basically consuming this slowly, because your body kind of has to catch up, because you're not really chewing, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah, you're not chewing. He did it very slowly. I was more the chugger, to be honest. But that's probably still college days and all, you know. Nice. I can't help it.
Oh, no, look, when I had to have an x-ray done and they said, do you need to drink 2 containers of this chilled liquid?
Oh, yes.
I chugged that stuff down while I was standing there, and they're like, why would you do that? I said, to get it over with. This is not about taste. This is about process. You guys said that I have to consume X amount of this material, this contrast material, and I'm just going to put the contrast material away like it was going on a shelf. I'm not going to sit there and contemplate it. I'm not going to sip at it, sniff at it, and check the bouquet. You need this here so that you can run a scan. That's it. But Soylent is meant to do the same thing, right?
He tried chugging, but it made him ill versus me, where it was just bad flavor. But him, it was like instant reaction. I don't know what the hell was going on. And what's even more disappointing is you go through this hell, right? And ideally, you don't get hungry for 4 to 5 hours or whatever.
How many hours?
4 to 5, ideally.
Oh,
but
4 to 5. I thought I heard you say 45. I'm like, what?
Oh, that'd be ideal. I'd be down. I'll be skinny in no time then.
Because you just don't eat anymore. But, I mean, eventually your body, your blood sugar is going to say, hi. Remember us? I mean...
Who needs them?
So, separate issue. Separate issue, I agree. So, the article, though, from the New York Times, was it talking about problems with people digesting it, I wonder? Or... Did you... Whoops, we've lost audio.
She's muted.
Uh-oh, watch the mute button. There we go. Yeah, we switched to new recording software, folks. Don't worry about it. Go ahead, Pinky.
Yeah, so they said less than 1% of the people with this current batch apparently is having issues similar to FreeBSD. But they pride themselves in trying not to have this at all. So they're mentioning that if this happens to you, you're supposed to just throw away all that and wait till January or so, where they'll release 1.7.
I mean, they have release version numbers for their...
Yes, this is 1.6.
and what am I supposed to subsist on, if not of Soylent, and that's my thing? Die. Thanks, terrific. So, has anyone else tried it in the group? Coop, have you ever had Soylent?
No, I haven't had Soylent, but I've had other protein powders, and... Lately, with the current diet that I'm on, I really have to look at the nutritional value of everything, especially the carb count. And I sent a picture of what I'm currently doing to Pinky earlier today when she was telling me about issues with Soylent on IRC. If I can actually just stall for a moment, then I'll be able to say what it is, because it's got... it's there. It is. It is Advant Edge EAS, it's like one carb a scoop and 15 grams of protein.
Nice.
And it's only 60 calories per scoop as well.
Oh wow! And do you find it keeps you satisfied?
Yeah, it's really cheap at HEB compared to like Myoplex and Muscle Milk and some of those others, which are like $30 for a canister. This is like $13 to $15. Half the price, not as much protein as everybody else, but nobody else has one carb per scoop and only 60 calories.
Nice.
And you mix that up with, or what I tend to do most often is either water or almond milk and then a drop of mint extract because, well, I'm addicted to mint. Yes, I'm a part of Mint Anonymous.
Nice.
If you are a member and not just the president, you know, welcome.
Okay, so I'm going to jump in and ask Cursor if he's ever tried this and what your thoughts were on it.
So I have an interesting story about this, actually. It's very, very difficult to get anything over from the US here, especially if it's like new and scary for the government over here. So sort of does fall in that category. So when it first sort of launched, I think there was a major sort of DIY revolution. So there was actually, I think it was DIY.soylent, and it was people that made their own Soylent.
Oh, wow.
And I had a go at this. I made like a month batch, like, straight down, didn't taste it. I was like, yeah, let's go for it. And I think I messed up the salt, because when you tasted it, it was literally like drinking seawater.
Oh, gosh.
So, yeah, so what I decided to do was to do the chug thing, which you guys did, obviously. And I think it had similar effects, because I felt very, very sick. So in the end, I think I pretty much made it close to the recipe.
That sounds accurate.
Wow. There we go.
So, I mean, so now having tried it, what kind of caloric intake, do you recall what the nutritional values were or anything? And if it was similar in taste to the wet socks, dirty oatmeal kind of consistency, that might not be an exact explanation, but it's mine. So, again, comments to hashtag SATX hackers. Anyway, no, what did you think of it after all that?
Well, I just remember putting, like, the way I did it was to look at what you should have as a recommended daily allowance of everything, and then slowly broke it down into things. I remember, like, a lot of Nesquik in it, a lot of chocolate Nesquik.
Okay.
But it still tastes like seawater. That is the only thing I can describe it as. Wow. I think totally messed up the salt.
So I will share that I haven't tried Soylent, but a friend of mine was pushing me to eat something a little more healthful at breakfast. So that was just straight oatmeal. And most oatmeal being tending to be kind of gelatinous and not so appetizing. I was trying to find a way, since I'm a type 2 diabetic, because I've eaten poorly and taken poor care of myself, therefore I am in this situation. What has been recommended is to get off regular sugars, but still consume oatmeal, which is kind of a problem, because I want convenience. So how do I get both? So I buy pre-made oatmeal, and I found that I can get away with doing the it's cinnamon, straight cinnamon, and you add salt. Right? So I found that if you're going to do it with a packetized method, a 16-ounce serving of oatmeal, which is quite sizable, mind you, is two Splenda packets, one of those little salt packets that you find in the store, usually, if it's just like when you buy chips or fries or whatever, and you just grab a little packet of salt off the counter. It's one of those two Splendas, as I said, and then as much cinnamon as you can stand, and you mix that through, and it actually ends up being relatively appropriate in taste to a packet of cinnamon sugar flavoring. The other way to do it is to buy actual off the spice counter at your local supermarket. Look for apple pie spice or pumpkin pie spice, which is a little premixed thing from the spice vendor. And you put that in, and then add, again, you have to balance the salt and the sweet. And that way it tastes more like what you're expecting. But if you go through all of that rigmarole, you wind up being able, at least I do, because I don't mind the quote-unquote apple spice flavors or cinnamon spice flavors. But if that's not your thing, you have to find something else that works. And I have a feeling it's the exact same story with Soylent. But that's enough about that. And it could be related to Scary Spice. Thank you, Coop. Who has gone back to their real name, I think, at this point. They're not scary anymore. I think they're just unemployed Spice. I'm not sure, though. Aww. I don't know. I haven't heard from that.
She has been on American Idol, or not American Idol. America's Got Talent. Dancing
with Stars, right? Something like that?
No. America's Got Talent for like the last 3 or 4 seasons.
Scary Spice? Are you sure?
Yes.
Oh,
yes,
then my apologies. Spice. My apologies. I just haven't frequented that program to know that. That's my fault. So instead, I'll ask Coop if he can tell us maybe and get me out of this mess that I've started here.
Yes, this next article, I think, is sponsored by TrumpSingles.com.
For the love of Pete, can we end that joke? For
what is Trump Singles?
Oh, gosh.
Someone needs to fill me in here.
Oh, it's a terrible joke that they won't let die.
We're never going to give it up or let you down that we'll bring it up.
This joke of an election is done, we probably will let it die, horrible death like Trump's campaign has.
will it become a President Singles then?
Oh God, no!
All things are possible, sadly, and the things are not decided.
Being
here.
Brought up on charges of fraud, and then sexual...
Look. When Ming the Merciless harassment. Is brought upon charges of wearing rubberized pantaloons amongst the sheep, we're all going to be confused. So let's move on from the aliens moment that we had and just get to the story.
Yeah, that's when the wheels fall off right there.
Because I don't like politics in our podcast.
Did we ever have wheels? This is an important question.
No, we had socks. We've been scooting along on socks.
That are soggy and taste like dirty oatmeal.
Ding, ding, ding. And now we know why Soylent tastes the way it does. So if you want things that taste better, stop wearing socks with rubber pantaloons and go.
The wheels on the podcast go round and round.
Are you okay, Sciatic?
Almost got that right through my nose. That's awesome. Caught me off guard.
My job here is done. I'm done.
So, here's the story.
Back to the actual story that's by a Wall Street Journal, and unfortunately because we screwed around, has popped up blocking the actual article, other than the first paragraph saying, click here to subscribe. Screw you.
No. Okay. Let's not
instead,
go with the
I'll
paywall.
Tell you what I was able to read before took all privileges away. Yeah, it's Wall Street Journal, if you didn't already know. And apparently, during an investigation into former Representative Anthony Weiner's alleged sexting investigation, some more emails popped up. And Clinton's in trouble again. And no, we're not actually talking about Bill this time. No, we're talking about Hillary because she is tech challenged, especially when it comes to being able to use email properly. But at least she's not like that one individual that used AOL.
Well,
for top secret documents. Not going to say any names. Oh, cough, cough.
Kafka. But, what does Kafka have to do with this? Never mind. Stay on task.
Yeah. But anyway, it's just terrible. It kind of makes you really want to just laugh at everything that's going on because you got both major candidates basically coming up on charges as it looks like now. And the very end of the run, we got according to the watch, maybe a week until election day, if that.
Yeah.
Where's the story going to end? Good Lord.
No, see, this is actually the reason why I avoid so much political discussion and rhetoric, or it's not even rhetoric. It's really just slinging at this point. The problem is the culture has become so vehement in partisan nature that people are unable to have a relatable discussion any longer. And that frustration is evidenced everywhere in social media. Everyone is just venting at this point. I think it's basically like a political attendance of Burning Man. I mean, everyone just is venting. It's all just leaking out all over the place. Everyone is shouting at the top of their lungs. And it's not going to get any better, I don't think, for quite some time. So it's not productive either. So from the point of view of saying, look, we can talk a lot about what we feel, which is fine in a therapy session, and podcasting can be like therapy, I suppose. But I honestly think that we can focus instead on the stories about things like, okay, so what actually is happening, right? So if there's more information that came out in the leaking of sensitive information through personal hosting of email, that concerns me from an information security professional. That to me is, okay, that's interesting, but it won't change the context of what's about to happen. One does not cover the other, sadly. So I hope you don't mind that I ask us if we can focus on that instead. Unless you want to talk about your Trump singles update. I don't know.
No, I don't have a profile on Trump singles, but I did want to perpetuate the joke of our media by saying it's sponsored by Trump singles because, the story never ends. The spinning continues to spin doctors, but like you said, hosting your own service is much like anything, even a database. What do? You set it up right. You don't have admin password. You don't put it on an unsecure network. You don't let people stick anything anywhere on their computer that they picked up in the parking lot. Yes, people are stupid enough to pick up a USB drive in the parking lot, stick it into their work computer. At work, of all things.
Don't stick your USB in crazy.
Sciatic's computer when he was at Saha, you know, not that anything ever happened like that. Right, Pinky? You didn't do anything like that.
Coop, that was between you and I at 2 a.m. on Trump singles with our beer.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, wow.
Sorry, I was trying to segue into somebody else's opinion, but I guess I got derailed.
No. You're fine, because the way I see it is that she's supposed to have caught that you were going to point out the IoT DDoS attack story. I think that's where he was trying to go. And that's actually Cursor's story, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. I wanted to point out on the last story, like, obviously I think we get our news a little bit delayed than you guys, but I think it's a case of this guy, Mr. Wiener, who's appropriately named,
yeah.
He's being looked into for his emails to do with some sort of, like, child dodgy case or something like that. So it's actually, apparently, it's emails that are, like, not deleted from previous events. So that's why I think they're making a major call, because they want the whole FBI to say a certain date when this is going to be done, because otherwise you guys are going to be voting at the same time as these trials are going on, and it's a bit dodgy in that way.
Well, and I think this is, so we have there's another podcast. It's Buzzkill and Crackpot. If you ever check out oh my gosh, I can't think of the name of the podcast at the moment. It's Adam Curry and John C. Dvorak, and they do a podcast all about the things that... that's going to kill me. I have to look it up now. Anyway, the point is they do a whole lookup on a story on stories that happen in the background. So they're very fond of pointing out what are we being distracted from. And in a lot of ways, whenever there is a very big social story, they talk about the distraction of the week because something else will happen. For example, yesterday, a piece of legislation passed, that basically retooled, it wasn't SOPA or PIPA, it was something else. And it basically made it possible for, I have to go look that story up too. In other words, we were distracted by all this other noise, and the signal to noise ratio is high enough that we miss the point, which passed quietly in the background, but we were all distracted by the bright, shiny, blinky thing that was waving its hands in front of us. And No Agenda. There it is. No Agenda Show, I believe it is. No Agenda is the name of the podcast. Sorry. Anyway. So I believe that that's why the story about Mr. Wiener and his controversial emails is coming back, to help distract us from something else that just happened. But that's my opinion. I do have a tinfoil hat. Actually, you know what? It's more like a Faraday cage underoos at this point. But I digress.
But you can't stop the signal, Mal. You can't stop the signal.
It's true. It's true, but... before I go into my story, I believe we were actually going to let Cursor talk about his actual story about the DDoS attack.
So this is an article on CIO.com, and it's about the attack that we all experienced last week. That actually hit us over here as well, because a lot of the companies that we use, even the one that we use at work, is based off the same name server that was actually attacked.
Really?
So that went down for it went down, came back up, went down again. And this is all coming from IoT devices. So apparently there's 6.4 billion of them used today. And I mean, as a hacker or a malicious person, why would you not use these devices? You know, they're new, they're very low powered, they work very quickly. Even things like, you know, on like Zigbee networks, you've got a mesh of devices that could all attack sequentially, even for like things like teardrop attacks and things like that. Very, very easy to do.
And actually, that does dovetail right into the story that I was about to read from Slate.com, talking about vulnerability is the internet's original sin. And as you were describing, Cursor, on the day, perhaps not long from now, when the entire internet crashes, no one will be able to say that we didn't see it coming. Dun, dun, dun. Anyway, that's the opening line of this article. The denial of service attack that came up on the morning of the 21st of October, which shut down Twitter, Spotify, Netflix, and a dozen other sites, offers a preview in miniature and against relatively trivial targets of how the Day of Doom could unfold. And this website has actually locked down my ability to scroll, so I can't even get to the next line. But the point is that while we all use these, and we even brought it up in last week's episode, while we all are distracted by playing with our shiny blinky toys, there is a risk of that you can easily discover using a tool called Shodan. And if you're in this industry, you're probably familiar with those who popularize its use to find defaultly passworded items. Cursor, I don't know how much, what kind of industry work you do, so you'll have to forgive me if I ask openly, is this a tool that you have used in your everyday practice or something that you've heard about from others maybe?
In terms of the tool from day to day, it's not something that we use, but because we depend on the infrastructure to be there and those people use these types of tools, that's where the leak is, the weak point in the system.
And that actually leads me into asking Pinky if in your collegiate cyber defense competition activities, if you take advantage of those known types of vulnerabilities, and as a blue teamer, right? So how do you train folks? How do you get folks in the mindset of thinking about where those holes are and what can they do to plug them?
So what we've been doing this year, we've been kind of weak addressing this point previously, but we're actually having a baby red team along with our own baby blue team. And we're encouraging our red team to just take the lazy way out, but not use Metasploit per se, but start using things, you know, like, you know, exploit DB and whatnot, and use some of those more latest vulnerabilities that are a little bit harder to patch to make our blue team realize, hey, you need to Google whatever version of SSH server you're running and see what's currently, you know, sensitive on it. What do you need to do to secure it? And just make them realize the world's not perfect. Things are going to happen. So how do you find them and kick them out as quickly as possible?
And Coop, with that kind of thinking as well, I don't know if you've if that was part of the when you participated in the pen test competition, was that something that you were taught to look for? Are devices with defaults on them? Was it something they described, or is that something you've learned from others as a good basic attack?
Looking for low hanging fruit and competition hasn't really come up other than like CTFs that ATX 2600 has done every once in a while. It's mostly come up with, just researching bug bounty and trying to get started in that, being a bit of a digital Boba Fett, as it were, just trying to go through and pick up your bounties and get deliverables on it, because there are some, you know, not very good paying ones out there that most people tend to not look at, and it's low hanging fruit. So it's a great place to sit and learn. And that's very marketable skills as a guy that's unemployed and trying to job hunt. And actually that's going to come in handy hopefully this week when I go to an interview.
Oh, all the best on the interview. Everybody, please be pulling for Coop during this week's events for him. Hopefully this turns into something positive and a good first step on a long road of career-wide industry love, or at least work. So, actually, thinking about all of this mess does bring up the thought of what it's like if you wanted to try and trick someone into entering their credentials, or to make a mess out of that. I mean, Cursor, have you heard of anything about that recently?
I was just gonna say, I've got to bring this story because it's about UK bank support. It's got to be me, isn't it? and also on the point of going from the DDoS attack, which I find so boring now. I don't know about you guys, but DDoS is like, come on. Like, it's one of those attacks. And the second one has got to be phishing attacks. Like, it's probably the first attack everyone learns because it's so nice to put together and it's so easy to work. This is an article in the Register. This talks about phishing fraudsters that are posing as UK bank social media types. And it's very easy for them to gather information. You talk, Cooper, about the low-hanging fruit. And sometimes it can just be that. I know that there's like phishing attacks that are directed towards CEOs and things like that as well. And it might not be the case if they get all the information they want, but just a little bit of information can take you a long way, especially in social engineering.
And that's actually an excellent point. I'm very curious if you actually actively participate in social engineering efforts, Cursor, or is that something that are you part of a team that focuses on different aspects, or is that more of a personal pursuit?
No comment.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. But I guess that's perhaps a bridge too far. I guess more appropriate.
I think social engineering is something that we all use, whether we think we do or not, in every different way. Even if it's, you know, the way you speak to colleagues, the way you speak to people you meet. You know, it's something that becomes part of you. And to be honest, as a hacker, the way you think about things, even you know, building security and things like that, as you're walking around, you think in a certain way that's like, this would be easy to do. You'd call up this place, you'd get this name, you'd call back as this name, and that sort of thing. I think that's mainly spurred by Kevin Mitnick's book. I think it's The Art of Social Engineering, which was a great book, and definitely.
That was The Art of Deception.
The Art of Deception. Thank you. Yeah, that is it. It's great.
Well, actually, and realizing that anyone who ever it was a brilliant article I was reading last week that, or actually, it was actually a talk from SkydogCon, so you'll be able to download it, I believe, in the next couple of weeks when Pentest Fail gets through editing and posting. But it was about, we're all doomed because the presenter has a 3-year-old daughter who is basically able to social engineer almost anything she wanted because she knows that daddy has a soft spot for her. And because of that, we're all, how can we possibly defend against, you know, large targeted attacks and social engineering attacks when a 3-year-old can get cookies, from the top shelf because you'll give them to her, essentially, is the gist of the whole talk. And so we have to be vigilant in thinking about how we want to handle things because our enemy, or rather our opponent, not enemy necessarily, but our opponent knows us, right? OPSEC is our watchword. Right, Coop? Isn't that the big thing? OPSEC, and you have to practice safe sex. OPSEC, MSEC, all the different kinds of security protection that you can possibly practice. It's all part and parcel of protecting yourself against, you know, any kind of social experiment. Whether it's over social media, giving up information over... have you ever done one of those... I'm sure we've mentioned this before. Coop, do you ever do those online... surveys? Do you ever do those?
What kind of surveys are we talking about here? You know, we're, you know, for products or something? No, not Trump singles. Sorry, Pinky.
Oh, gosh.
Mentioning it in the chat. But I thought you were about to say, as far as OPSEC, have you ever, for the fun of it, dressed up as like a pizza guy and, you know, crashed a meeting and then be like, hey, what are you guys doing?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, hacking, what's that? Can you teach me?
Well, but see that,
just
that,
to see what they do.
But if you forget going that, you know, because I don't think you'd be able to as easily walk in on a group of people who claim to be hackers unless they say they're hackers all the time. And in other words, are inviting the people to want to say, look how awesome I am. I mean, that's an easy technique, is to sneak up on someone and tell them how awesome they are and just bowl them over with all of the friendly words, right? And then get them to show you something. But what about something more innocuous? If you've ever gone to a thrift shop, you may see old work shirts on the rack that you can buy for next to nothing. In the context of an everyday life, you may not want to buy that, because why would you want to go to work or school or wherever you're going wearing a shirt that says notmycompany.com or something?
Mm-hmm.
Which would be outstanding from the point of view of walking in. I mean, heck, someone gave me an old shirt because they'd outgrown it. They gave me the shirt. I wore it to work the other day because it was clean, you know, and you might be in between laundry cycles. And someone asked me if there's something that they should know about my current job situation. I said, no, not at all. I'm just wearing a shirt. But, I mean, it was that simple. And if you ever wanted to put two and two together, looking the part and walking in can be right next to each other. Wouldn't you say, Pinky? Have you ever done any social engineering experiments like that, where you just try to look the part to get someone to let you do something?
I would never do that. I'm so offended that you would accuse me of this.
I didn't accuse. Yes, I asked. I asked.
Honestly, I think it's a lot easier for women to pull off social engineering in a way. So, I mean, you have the obvious, just wear a black dress, go to a bar, go harass people that way. At UTSA, especially due to my pink hair, I can either act as a student or faculty member as needed. You know, I can have my super nice work clothes. That's distracting. Thank you. or I can just go talk and, you know, dress down briefly, act as a student, whatever. Mainly, I don't social engineer that much, but I will admit that I'm horrible at, like, Best Buys and crap, and I purposely will act dumb to see what they do and then harass them later when they say incorrect things, because I'm a troll.
So, Coop, do you ever troll for funsies in, like, retail big box stores?
Yeah, because they never know what the hell they're saying. Like, freaking Best Buy, trying to buy simple parts, like, oh, you need this and this and this. Like, are you kidding?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so let me ask all three of you.
Go to the Apple store. Those are not geniuses behind the Genius Bar. No, that's not a ripoff of Big Bang Theory, though they made fun of it. And this is knowing from being one of those dorks behind the bench at one point in time. That's when you say, good Lord.
Well, okay, so then I would like to ask then, if you've ever actually gotten legitimate help. Again, silly and off topic, but have you ever gotten legitimate help from a support person at a store? I'm going to start very briefly asking Cursor if you've ever had to go in and get help, because we've all had at one point or another.
Professional help.
I've worked for the devil. I've worked in the store we just mentioned. I've worked in an electronics store. So I've been on the other side of that. And also, I've also gone into stores where they've asked me if I'd like to upgrade my HDMI cables for the small sum of £100 for like 2 meters, which is an absolute crime.
Now that's a crime. That's a crime. Man, the first time someone offered me gold-tipped AV cables, and I'm like, really? Does it make that much of a difference? No. If you don't know, I mean, goodness, it's a terrible, terrible thing. And I just, it's like being preyed on, man.
What do you mean that you're not getting better audio quality from that monster platinum coated cables? Are you serious?
That particular vendor in mind. Oh my goodness.
Yes, I had to drop that one because, well, Circuit City, Best Buy, Apple, heck, even back at CompUSA, they pushed that, and that's going back.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Back in time. Yes, we're doing the time warp again.
Yeah. You can start singing? I want to see you in that outfit. Actually, I don't. I'm kidding.
Even Fry's pushes it, which surprises me because they tend to actually know something. But, yeah, they got quotas too.
So, okay, have you ever gotten – let's flip that around. How quickly did you get offered a job when it looks like you knew something at one of these stores?
No. Usually it's ends up with them saying, okay, here's your part, go.
Oh.
Like, you know too much, get the heck out of my store.
That's a surprise. Cursor, has that been your experience as well, that basically if you demonstrate that you know more than they do, they just want you to be gone?
I'm not really too sure. As I say, I've worked on the other side of the fence for too long. Like, but what you get on the other side is people coming in as if they want to demonstrate their knowledge to you. Like, no reason to come in at all apart from to tell you what they know. And sometimes they just expect, you know, like the sort of typical dumb person. But sometimes they come across someone that knows maybe the same amount or a bit more, and then they ask a simple question. You're like, oh, I've got what I need. I don't really know any more about this. So then they go. it's very, very strange. I mean, the Apple store is definitely the best place for that. People will come in and tell you about a product that's just launched that you'll be selling in like a week. And you're like, yeah, we all watched the keynote as well. Yeah.
But they're excited about it. That's what the users group meeting used to be for, I thought, was that you get together and dish about all the awesome possibilities of whatever your tech was at the time. Because, I won't get into all that. I was going to ask Pinky the same question if she ever got asked, you know, hey, you seem to know so much. Do you want a job? Or was it always, you know too much, get out of my store?
A lot of the time it's been get out of the store. But surprisingly, the Microsoft store at La Cantera has been really friendly toward tech people. Where I literally was standing there with FreeBSD, one of our CCDC members, for like an hour. Where we just geeked it out with the manager at the store. He gives everyone his card. It's like, hey, if you ever need anything, just message, you know, send me an email. You want to use our store for a meeting? Go ahead, email me.
Wow.
You want a job? Here, email me. I was just like, seriously?
Look at that.
It's weird.
It's not all negative, people. That's awesome. I'm just curious about that. I think that's good stuff, actually. But so that brings us to the next story then, which is basically, if we shift gears here a little bit away from all of this retail talk, maybe we could talk about something you might want to buy. Coop, could you lead us in?
Actually, I can. And it's a nice article here from VentureBeat.com. And I chose it not really from the quality of the article, but plainly because I thought it was absolutely hilarious that, you know, they're trying to say that there's some true street cred in playing Watch Dogs 2 because, unlike other hacker games, we hung out with hacktivists in San Francisco and DEF CON for our research. It's like, are you kidding?
Oh, no, they're not.
Ubisoft. I haven't played the game, but the first one was kind of outlandish and a little bit ridiculous. And it seems kind of funny that they would think that, you know, a game would truly get cred. It's almost like, that one TV show, Mr. Robot, saying that they got a whole lot of cred by hanging out with Hack 5 and others. Yeah, they got some nice tools like, you know, the USB rubber ducky that you saw in season 2. But overall, here's season 2 in one line. If you haven't seen it, I'm sorry. Here's a spoiler.
Taking off my headphones.
The main character is batshit crazy. That's it. That's all it is. That's
that
all.
That is not a spoiler. You can see that from the first episode.
Oh.
Yeah, but that's at least season 1, there's actually decent amount of hacking.
Yeah.
You know, it's an actual tone to the show. Season 2, not so much. You get, it's almost like sprinkles on ice cream when they give you like 2 or 3 sprinkles instead of covering the entire thing.
You think the nice thing.
The ice cream is batshit crazy, and the tiny little sprinkles, like 2 or 3 of them, that's the hacking that's in the show.
The nice thing about Mr. Robot watching it is you get a break from the old, we just hacked into the mainframe. And from a film I watched earlier this year, I'll send you the shell, which is my personal favorite.
Send you the shell?
Yep.
You attach it to the email?
The new Jason Bourne film, there is a bit in it where they go, I'll send you the shell now. And it has got to be.
Oh, I remember that.
I haven't seen that yet, but now I know that I'm going to be laughing at least one scene in the movie.
Guys, just remember, when you need to track an attacker, all you have to do is build a GUI using Visual Basic.
Wait, what? I'm confused.
I'm sorry, that doesn't make sense. Can you rewind and replay that for me? I think I just had a brain fart. What?
It's never going to make sense. That was from, like, God, what a show was that? What is NCIS, but that might be wrong.
Well, I'm going to go back to Automan.
Actually, that kind of sounds like NCIS, but that's also the same show that had the hot goth and semi-awkward nerdy agent
using the same keyboard.
On the same keyboard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was cute, and that's the point of that show. It's meant to be digestible in 42 minutes, and people buy it because it gets them out of the corner they've written themselves into, because it's just a trope at this point. Because
it was CSI. CSI was using Visual Basic to build a GUI.
Okay, that makes more sense, because I don't think NCIS would go that far. NCIS wouldn't spend that much time on it, because they have literally, I think they've got it clocked down to about 45 seconds from the time they walk into the room with the overlaid Unce music that the character listens to, and then flips the script and they're leaving, usually with that person making some kind of head nod or something, and they cut to the next scene. It's very, very pat, because it has to be. And the show's been on for 14, 15 years because the formula works with people, and it makes them feel happy about it. It works. I've stepped way too far into my media side. Sorry, I'll come back.
So, speaking of horrible hacking that's entertaining in media, did anyone happen to remember seeing on the last season of Castle the hackback attack with kitties?
What?
Yes, it wasn't Catterday. It was during, at one point, Castle, the main character, and the hacker doing it was actually attacking Beckett and her cohort, their computer, and they reversed the hack with kitten videos.
Oh.
So you're actually reminding me of this weird game. I didn't play it personally, but it was, let me pull it up real fast. It's in my Google search history. Well, just when we're talking about slightly inaccurate things.
No, no. While you're digging that up, I just wanted to go back for a second and talk about the actual story regarding Watch Dogs. So Watch Dogs 2, some of the guys from EA reached out to some of the people in the community that I'm aware of and were actually asking them about it. Because, of course, EA wants legitimate people in the industry to talk about and enjoy the game. But I played through the first two scenarios in the Watch Dogs game. I spent money on it. I went through it, and because the guys at work were all excited about it. Now, I don't work necessarily with folks who are very industry-focused at the time. I work with more of those folks these days. But at the time, they said, well, it's a lot of fun. It's good. It has good story. I said, okay, I'm excited. I'm in. I'm totally in. And I went and I bought it, and I was so frustrated because there's a little button, and it just says hack. And you just hold the button down, and that's hacking. And I said, no, I was hoping for puzzles. I was hoping for something to engage me beyond holding a button down and saying I did something. But unfortunately, it just doesn't work that way, at least in the early levels. I didn't play far enough to find out if it gets any better. I admit I'm personally biased. Sorry, I didn't mean to just sort of grab the mic from you there, Pinky. Did you find what you were looking for?
Yes, I did. It's called Welcome to the Game. And it's all about the deep web, because obviously the deep web is more popular these days.
Mm-hmm.
And it's specifically aiming toward Tor. And the whole point of this game, again, I didn't watch it, or I didn't play it because I'm a little wuss with horror games, and this isn't super horror, but it's enough to get me jumpy. But basically, you're supposed to be on Tor, and you have 30 days where all the URLs start with A and N, and you use the hidden wiki to find 8 different segments of a URL. Once you have this, you can access the Red Room, which is really messed up, and I won't go into it in case anyone who wants to play. But the fun, horrible part about it is that you're constantly getting hacked, either through DDoS or through, like, kernel attacks or whatever they called it. With the DDoS, it's just one of those stupid mini games where you redirect the arrow to make it go into the right place. The defense against attack or getting your kernel hacked was to type in random little words that look like this, including libraries and C. So, tad bit offensive. They're trying to be technical and it hurts.
Type cookie, you idiot!
C is for cookie. It's good,
like,
enough for me.
It includes stringlib.h, and it's like, why?
Well, it's so maybe this is the same principle behind why the Publishers Clearinghouse things over here work. It turns out that if people, it was a recent story that basically people didn't like Instant Cake Mix. And it's the same principle. Because Instant Cake Mix originally had powdered eggs and powdered milk mixed right in. So people didn't think, they didn't sell well because you could just dump all the material in the box, from the box into the bowl, mix everything through, and you were done and you had no interactivity at all. And people who were making cakes at the time said, I don't feel like I'm doing enough. So they had to go back and make sure that their product required you to add eggs and milk. And the rest of it, you just dump in the bowl. And that's exactly what these other, what used to be the Publishers Clearinghouse stuff used to do, is require you to put these little coupons, and the little stickers on the forms to send them in. It was enough of a, you did something to get people to buy in and basically sell their information in a way that's not unlike what social media does today, where we take surveys to find out some pop culture thing that we can post to our timelines or our pages so we feel validated. And because we did something, and oh, look, I did something. I'm apparently just like this popular character. That is our giveaway. That's the trade-off. You got a little bit of a feel-good, and you gave away your information for nothing in exchange for being called about another timeshare opportunity. Who knows? But I digress. Anyway, I would actually like to take a second to talk about an article from the EFF that actually describes that newly released documents show how Hollywood has influenced the copyright office's comments on set-top boxes. So in the current debate over cable set-top box competition, content and cable industries worked together to oppose regulation that could have potentially weakened their control over personal television hardware and software. So the EFF was surprised, though, to see that the U.S. Copyright Office was kind of echoing Hollywood's flawed legal arguments. So this is from a deep link from this month, and thanks for finding it, Coop, that basically describes that somehow that the U.S. Copyright Office was on the side of television producers. So it was weird. So the EFF folks filed a FOIA, a Freedom of Information Act request, to the Copyright Office, and it turns out 310 pages of a response came back that basically showed that the MPAA, the Motion Picture Association of America, and its partners representing major TV and movie studios, they made no attempt to seek any other views. They basically took sides in the set-top box debate. So this doesn't, like, basically it was deaf ears. They just said, we're not going to listen to consumers. We're not listening to anyone else. We're only going to listen to ourselves. And basically, it's already written, basically. You're not going to get a voice. And that's something that's concerning to me, basing on our consumption of data, of media. What does it mean for us? What are they going to do? There's actually, it's perceived as there being a monopoly on the small boxes that we put on top of our televisions. So how would you break that? And the only answer is going to be that we would wake up and do something about it. It's interesting from the point of view that if you don't stand up and take a stand on this, which seems innocuous, who cares about a set-top box? But those set-top boxes are basically monitoring everything we do. It knows what we watch. It knows what types of stories we're interested in. It knows how long we were watching, at least in theory, because it was on, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a new way of passively gathering information on us in the same way that malware would, right? Or am I misunderstanding that? Pinky, am I off base here?
Honestly, I would lean toward agreeing with you. So it's a question of, do you think they actually anonymize the data? You know, is it just aggregated to this block or however, whatever the group level is, you know, this is the most popular shows, or do they truly go to an individual level that they can tie it to you, tailor maybe ads to you, tailor, you know, pay-per-view, what should be recommended to you based on what you watch, and, well, you may enjoy that. Again, it is a privacy issue. It's the whole problem of, should you have the option to consent toward this recording for better services, or should you have the ability to say, no, please don't do this, I'll take any less recommendations or whatever, you know. And are people even aware of it? I would argue no, we don't.
And
what do you think, Coop?
Yeah, exactly. I was just getting there. Coop, what were your thoughts on this one?
Well, to be honest, thinking about it, tailing your experience, collecting way too much personal information about likes, dislikes, what have you, that kind of segues into the next story almost. Just think about applying the same ramifications of viewing activities and everything else that you don't want to know gets out. Just imagine how much worse it will be and how horrible it will be if your sex robot gets malware.
Wait, what?
Well, yeah. the next article that Pinky is going to have, just think about that. You know, just everything with the set-top box, you can apply it to the very next article and get that much more creeped out by it.
Cursor, would you like to provide your feedback about this current story before we go there?
I thought that was the craziest jump I've ever seen. It's like, oh yeah, you know, people watching what we watch on TV. Yeah, but what about sex robots? I think in terms of the whole set, you call them set top boxes, right? Okay. But in the whole point of that is, it comes down to what is private data? Because all the acts we have are around, like, you know, personal data. What is personal data? So I think, to be honest, it depends how they're collecting it. And like you say, Pinky, is actually, do you get a say in what they keep? And once you get that sorted, it's all fine, I think. But, you know, things like tailored advertisements can be useful. If you've been watching a lot of documentaries on, you know, something, you might want to see another thing. And how is it any different to your online activity? If you like a page on Facebook, you're going to see pages of that on Facebook. If you visit lots of links on Google, you're going to see those advertisements. If you search something on Amazon, believe me, they're going to like chuck that stuff up on every single page you go to. It's no different. I don't know where that's an excuse to get used to it or be desensitized, but you know, it's one of those, and I don't want to hold you back from the sex robot story. But there we go. Yeah.
No sex robots. Let's go.
Don't you want to talk about the vulnerabilities there, Cursor? I know you're all about the vulnerabilities.
the vulnerabilities of sex robots or set-top boxes?
Both.
Isn't it about the same?
This is going to be a misuse for Shodan if I ever heard one.
What port do you think it is? 6969?
Oh, come on.
You know, the eyes could be webcams. Yeah, that's the revenge POV site I would ever want. Oh, God.
Well, no. So it's bad enough that we say the eyes are the windows to the soul, and we're saying now basically it's the eyes are the windows to your webcam? I mean, no, it's... That's just bizarre enough as it is, or are you just going to start doing, you know, coming up with stranger and stranger applications here? Which
it's kind of like a self POV, if you like.
I think we've kind of gone to a dark place, a very dark place.
No, we're going to be talking about going to a dark place. Let's get this right.
And yes, starting with
that
Trump
thing is empty as a vessel without a soul. What?
Hey. La, la, la. I wish I could plug my ears, but there were headphones over them. Okay, so, if you're listening still at this point, I would almost like to apologize, but I can't. Because the truth is that this is real. It actually is the problem, is that as much as it makes me uncomfortable to believe that this is going to happen, we know it is. Because if the revolution of the Internet of Things is any indicator, that means that every time that social bot of yours that connects you to your special other somebody in another city or on the other side of the planet, whether it's your pillow lighting up to let you know that they're laying on the responding pillow in a hotel on the other side of the planet, or you happen to be involved with your latest interactive experience, the truth is that without proper security protecting you, it's very likely that you're not interacting with what or whom you think you're interacting with. I think that's the safest way I can say that.
So you're saying only cyber safe now, people?
Just
make sure you use a firewall before you interact with that robot. Yeah,
don't stick your USB in crazy, okay?
Come on, crazy can be fun.
Yeah, because that's why you're always feeling safe to put random... That's why we don't have unregulated things, because we're not allowed to have nice things, right? Because if we had deregulation in all things, then you would have Uber spike pricing all the time. Not spike, what do they call it? It's surge pricing. So, you know, it's the end of a big game, at a big sporting event, so they know they can raise the prices on you because you don't want to take a cab, but now it went from $5 per mile or kilometer, if you will, to $20. What good is that? So the same problem with things like, fine, take chat roulette. What if it's bot roulette in the future? So you can have your sex bot connect to a random human somewhere else in the world, and you think you're dealing with a person. In fact, it is a weaponized platypus, man. You don't know whether it's some small furry green creature from Alpha Centauri pinging off a satellite or what you think you're paying for. Because I almost guarantee you that's not free, and if it's free... Well, free as in beer. Come on now.
I don't know, but free beer is kind of tasty.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no such thing as free beer. It's non-existent.
It's called begging.
Well, begging for beer?
Well, or getting people to throw parties and be the awkward person who never brings anything.
I'll bring plates. I've got forks. You know, land party.
Free beer, land party.
Oh my gosh. So, you know, we all know that person, but realistically, I'm curious. Okay. Moment of strange truth. Would you ever trust an IoT device, no matter what it is, with your data? And I mean that in the terms of like, oh, I found this cheap as can be webcam on my favorite sales site. and I plug it in, and I'm going to set it up so I can keep an eye on I'm growing an angry house plant, whatever. How would you secure it? Just a basic theory. Just give us a framework. Pinky, I'm going to ask you first.
Since we're already at this point, I would argue with the fact that we have Nest and Alexa and what do they call it, Google Home, things like that, we're already at this point. So it's at the point of, is anyone actually going through securing-wise, you know, does anyone plug in Wireshark to, like, a tap into their, you know, modem on the way out and seeing, hey, what are they passing through about me? You know, is it just the normal things I expect, or is Google collecting additional information? Is it encrypted, so can you actually see it or not? I mean, if it's encrypted and you don't have the key, what are they taking back from you that you don't know about? So I know some of my friends already have Google Home, for example, and what they do is that during the hours, they sometimes just power it off. They're like, I don't fully trust you. Mm-hmm. So you have absolutely no power, so no risk of you, you know, spying on me, listening to my conversations, things like that. So honestly, I mean, we can make jokes all day long about the Kinect in here. You know, we've all made jokes about my Kinect. Listen to the previous podcast if you need it. Other than things like that, I try to actually limit my Internet of Things because I personally don't trust them. I don't trust the companies that make them. I don't trust the fact that they're so hard to update, secure. I mean, like, once you get a vulnerability, like in your Nest, what are you going to do? Are you going to trust an SD card that gets mailed in? We had an article beforehand talking about how you can take advantage of that. Are you going to download yourself and actually remember to apply it? Can you actually do it without breaking anything? That's the problem with Internet of Things, and that's what makes them a lovely target, is that they're often running an outdated version of Android, so there's tons of exploits for them.
Yeah.
And updating them is painful.
Yeah. Well, I'm very curious, Coop, since I put Pinky on the spot, and she mentioned using Wireshark. So, since I know that you have learned a great deal working with other people, I'm curious how easy it was for you to pick up Wireshark and if you feel you have enough understanding of it. Because I don't know, right? So I'm just asking. What is your level of understanding of the tool, and can you basically figure out what data is moving back and forth, or if it's data you want versus don't want? And how hard is it to learn?
Well, when it comes to Wireshark, in my opinion, it just records tons of noise. And, you know, it's like any good log system that I hope everyone has on networks that they work at, what have you, and then you pay somebody, like, not a lot to go through it, and you pray they actually pay attention instead of sleeping while doing it, and then, you know, sift through the, you know, looking for the signal amongst the chaos to quote another fun movie. If you've got that answer, tweet it to hashtag SAT hackers. Yes, and here's a hint. It's probably an 80s movie.
Probably.
But, Hassan, you put out the question of how would you secure your IoT? Well, I'll give my own home as an example. Separate, complete network that I'll put that shit on. Mm-hmm. That will not be even on touching the same router that my router, switch, anything that my banking is done on, anything like that. No, that's going to be all on its own separate crap, separate wireless router that will not touch the internet. Unless I need to do an update, then I'll take down my own network that I do banking on, what have you, connect it, do my updates, and disconnect it. Because it doesn't have to be on there all the damn time. Just like Plex servers. If you have a Plex server, you don't have to connect it to the outside world. How often are you going to be away from the house and say, oh, I want to watch this. I haven't seen it in so long. Blah, blah, blah. Insert whatever you have on your Plex server.
Sharknado 6.
And, yeah. Why do you have to open up things? Don't. Close down all the ports. Make sure everything's local only. And use it for that only. You don't have to make it, you don't have to unzip your fly to the world. At least use a little bit of common sense. And I know comments is not so common, but still, if we love our tech, why not use it properly? I know it's starting to sound like a something like a silly, you know, health class in high school of saying, if you love your penis, treat it well. But look, you know, I'm not telling you to always wrap before you splash, but come on. Let's have at least a little bit of thought behind what we do. We don't have to put our Raspberry Pi out in the wind so that everyone can rape it, our Nest out into the world so that China can have their way with it, or Mr. Roberts, which supposedly specializes in Nest attacks, as he has said in many a keynote. But, you know, let alone, these devices are meant to make our lives easier. Why not set it up to where they do in our own house? Just like anything that Pinky does in front of her Kinect, I don't want to see it. It can stay in her own house. She can cover the lens for Pete's sake. Please cover the lens.
No, she's just...
Coop, spying on my damn Kinect.
Hey, it's on Shodan. What do you expect?
Oh, gosh. No.
It is not on Shodan. I checked. You decided to invite yourself over and put in a little network, you know, device just for you. And I decided to let you because we're all friends here. The goddamn stop spying if you're disturbed by it.
Actually, I was going to jokingly say we would just see you in probably some kind of pink pajamas trying to figure out a recipe of Soylent that doesn't taste terrible.
You also forgot Hello Kitty in that statement.
Okay, I wasn't going to put a name to it, but that's your business. See, I was trying to kind of flatten that out there.
Whenever I get my recipe perfected, I'll just give it to you. It'll be open source. How about that?
There we go. And so now I actually want to carry this question all the way to Cursor, because you've done this from the other side of the fence, from having to help people who are at the consumer level buying technology. And I have a feeling you have some experience maybe with monitoring tools. Tell me if that's not the case. But the idea is, okay, so now that Coop has suggested some of what he would do from a point of view of someone who is, let's say, a journeyman in this arena, what about consumers who've come to you? Do they understand the concept of VLANs, or do they understand the concept of monitoring and how to do that, so that an IoT device, which is marketed right at them, is something they're going to understand how to cordon off and keep away from everything else, kind of the equivalent of child protective locks on the doors?
Well, I mean, I've seen this from many sides, because obviously from selling it, but also my undergraduate project was actually designing a home automation system. So it was IoT. The thing is as a consumer, you don't want to know all this. You don't want to have to worry about this. This should come from the responsibility of the companies that are pushing out this kind of technology. And it isn't. That's the thing, because they don't want to know about that either. You know, they'll deal with it when it happens, and they'll come up saying, oh, we didn't know about this. And sadly, that's the way a lot of people go. One of the talks at DEF CON one year was just like crazy things they can find on the internet. And they found someone that had their house linked up to their own sort of, they had IoT devices everywhere. And one of those was a fireplace. So they were able to remotely turn on the fireplace from wherever they were using their own Apache server. But coming back to how you secure it, I totally agree with you, Cooper. Like, you keep stuff on your own network. The thing I devised for my undergraduate project was communicating with several devices. So you can still buy these end devices as long as you're happy to put in your own infrastructure that you know is protected. I guess the problem with that now is because things like connecting to the outside world is going to be quite hard, because things are moving so quickly. You know, you're talking about the Amazon devices that are coming out, they're connecting to real-time data. And to do that, you're going to have some way of getting out and in information.
Well, and that is the operative challenge, right? Is how do you get that information disseminated in a way not only that is helpful, but that people are willing to digest? Because I think I agree with you that people don't want to know. They really don't. It's too much effort. It's too much like work. And people have enough challenges getting through their day without, you know, where am I getting my next bout of caffeine and dinner? I'm not wanting to worry about having to set up segregated LAN topology in my house. So that's just not something that people are interested in, at least I would think. But it's just my opinion. I don't know. Anyone else from the group have another comment on this story?
Well, when we're talking about IoT, it often enough will just automatically make me think of Amazon Echo. a device, a speaker, a mic, all built into your house, always listening to everything you're doing, everything you're saying. And that's like the most obtrusive thing ever, even down to the fact that we've done it before. We've talked about it a while ago on a previous podcast that FBI came out and said that they could not confirm or deny that they were actually listening to the stream from Amazon. And Amazon later came out and totally came out and said, because of all the fighting about encryption, what have you, and that they're going to remove encryption from all their devices. So, yeah, items that are linking into your house, constantly listening, and being able to control and order and access your bank account and your credit cards, what have you, and you've just removed all encryption from it?
Yeah.
I'm sorry, but what the fuck are you thinking?
Well, okay, and so so they've actually cited that it's a lot of work, right? I listened when they initially had announced this, and I was kind of panic-stricken at first, saying, why would you turn that off? And the answer is, because no one's using it. To them, from a consumer business decision, if you look at their overall usage statistics, bam, gone. Nobody cares. Nobody cares. And I'm not among that group, because there's a sliver of us, a tiny vocal crying out group of people called security professionals, or whatever you want to call yourself. And they're the ones saying, but you need that encryption to protect your privacy, among other things. But it has to be constantly updated, and that costs money. And that talks to these folks, right? Or am I a little off of that? From where I'm sitting, it just sounds like we need better authenticators and authorization tools that are going to provide that security, because the vendors aren't. So it's the standards that have to protect us. Or have I gone off the rails on that? I'm just curious. Cursor, have you, seen, wow, the chat room right now, ladies and gentlemen, if we could share just the chat room side conversation, I think it would be a more interesting conversation than what we're talking about. But I'm unwilling to let it go. I'm unwilling to let it, well, that's actually part of the joke from the chat room. Never mind. No, I'm actually going to get to Cursor and ask him if
come on, do it.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah, no, I'm not responsible for
that. You want to talk about teleodontics?
That's not what that word is. That is not what that word is.
Tell me what it is.
I'm going to tell you that that's for a show that was called Dangerous Minds, and you can listen in, and they'll be happy to tell you about the...
Are you talking about the episode with Rich Lee where he talks about hacking his penis?
Like, it could be similar to that. It could be similar to that.
Well, okay, so
that was a great conversation. He's
keep
really,
your teledildonics really... to yourself, dang it.
He's kind of a genius.
So
you have to be able to hack your penis.
Yeah, but that's no. Stepping away
well,
from
on,
that.
You don't
thread.
Even want to have an implant on your penis. Or near it. You don't want to shake the tree.
This is about encryption on commercial devices, IoT devices.
This is called encryption. I mean, do you really want your, you know, device and your penis not to be encrypted and protected?
That's a separate story. But honestly, that actually is the heart of the story. Let's face it.
Yeah, because it's Internet of Things.
Internet of Things is going to carry your porn. It's going to. Your Internet of Probably. Things, your sex robot, whatever it is going to be tied right back to it. So if you have the Pleasure Tildonic 5000 or whatever the device is called, yes, encryption, I think, would have been the thing to concern yourself with, right? Because if you're not buying your porn from a major distributor, I'm imagining you're going down to the cottage industry that exists and the reason that we had VHS versus Betamax, right? I mean, there's an entire industry that sells billions of dollars worth of bits and bytes about people sticking their bits into other bytes. But
are you
talking about full dick encryption?
Yes, exactly. Or the Penis Protects 360.
What the?
So is that a new URL that we're going to have to use from
yes.
now?
Yes.
And on that note, I'm going to drag this
oh my God,
giant scroll in. I'm going to take this entire thread and say, thank you for joining us. And at your own risk, I don't know what just happened, but please encrypt your before your snip. I don't know. I just look. We're going to talk about security at some other time soon, but until we get to that point, I actually have to try to edit this and see what the heck I'm going to do with this.
Instead, just keep it.
Keep it.
You can't fix it in post. You can't. You must keep it.
Oh my gosh.
After all,
please.
Our newest sponsor, fulldickencryption.io. Yes, .io, because it's input and output.
Oh boy, shave it before you save it. .co.uk. Terrific. Hey, Cursor, thanks so much for staying up late to hang out with us. And I'm not sure what we just subjected you to, but I have a feeling it's probably still more vanilla than the Dangerous Minds podcast.
I thought I was coming on to InfoSec, but
more like InfoSec.
We talk about security. We talk about full encryption to penises.
Look, leave the members out of it, okay? I mean, this is supposed to be
true member benefits and encryption.
Oh my gosh!
Thanks for having me on the show. And if I go and check out that sex robot place, which is literally 10 minutes down the road, I will get back to you. And
you're gonna give us a review.
Definitely.
Please do about the teledildonics or whatever.
That's a word and a half.
It's a word that costs extra. There you go.
It's a mouthful.
What is that? Teledildonics.
Oh, there it is.
Sex hardware.
You've just given us a joke across the pond,
and quite literally our title for this episode. Thank you so much.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
Please, sciatic. Please come on.
Oh yeah. No. Cursor, is there any place that folks can catch up with you if they want to learn more about what you're currently up to?
So we're doing a podcast with Cooper at the moment, Dangerous Minds podcast. Apart from that, I'm on Facebook. You can find me. I'm under Cursor as well, so you'll be able to find me there. Always involved in different things in the biohacking scene, dangerous things, etc. So I'm sure you'll see me popping up.
Excellent. And Pinky, I understand you're getting involved in another competition coming up very soon. What's going on there?
Yes, I will actually be unavailable for next week's podcast. I'm sorry, it's probably going to be way too tame next week as a result. But I will actually be at RIT, the Rochester Institute of Technology, starting Friday, and I won't be coming back till 8 p.m. this coming Sunday. And I'm actually going to be participating in my first pen test competition. It's going to, UTSA was invited, 1 out of 10 universities, and we're competing against, our mortal enemies, UCF. So we definitely got to win.
Outstanding. Congratulations on being invited to participate. Hope all goes very, very well. Coop, you got any exciting things on the horizon, or is it more podcasting for you?
It's more podcasting and more job hunting. Nothing but a lot of interviews in the future, it seems like. But to break up the monotony of job hunting, there is a New Worlds Conference coming to Austin this coming Friday and Saturday. And I'll be there with Prophase Bio Studios, both talking about Dangerous Minds and Prophase Bio Studios, as well as interviewing a few people. I've already got a couple possible interviews lined up. One talking about spirulina in space. Yes, blue-green algae applications to our space exploration, along with design and challenges of design and construction of space elevators. Not exactly your normal biohacking type of interviews, but definitely interesting on the sciences, and especially since I have a definite love of space and space exploration, because the little nerd in me loves it for many years. But hey, gotta indulge a little bit of fantasy every once in a while. And no, I'm not talking about our previous discussion.
No, you're talking about space exploration, not dark space exploration. Look, so thank you very much, everybody, for joining us on this episode of Saha Says. And I, of course, am your host, Sciatic Nerd. And thank you very much, Cursor, for joining us, Pinky and Cooper. And next time, we might actually talk about security. Until then, thank you so much.
Dum-dum.